Oh, hello, and welcome back to The Villain Edit. I'm Monty Ashley.
I'm Rias Hall.
Hi, Rias. How are you doing?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm great. This is small talk. It's sort of a banter that happens before we start talking about the premise of the show.
Right. I went to a party this week. I remember how that works.
Oh, you went to a party.
I did.
I stayed home.
I remember that.
It was great. It was me and the dog. The dog wasn't so great.
What? She's a sweetheart.
Listener, please understand this. That is a lie. We have a bad, mean dog.
Oh, Bianca. She is a sweetie.
She is a bad dog named Bianca. Hello, Bianca. You can hear her sometimes. You might hear her on this podcast.
She's a guest on many podcasts.
Yeah.
She likes to talk more than we actually like to talk, to tell the truth.
So, competitive reality shows.
Dun, dun, dun. We're finally getting some back.
And to be fair, not just competitive reality shows, because I also watch some real garbage called Curse of Oak Island. But first, and most importantly, RuPaul's Drag Race.
Yes.
RuPaul's Drag
That's
Race.
That's what we're here for. RuPaul's Drag Race. RPDRAS. All Stars.
Yeah. I don't like the way they put the All Stars in. It's RuPaul's Drag Race All Stars Season 4.
So That's a lot. That's a lot.
And it's its own separate show, according to everything, which it isn't really. Like, it's suspiciously similar to regular Drag Race in a lot of ways, I think. Now,
True.
We're one episode in, and there's also the Hollis Slay Spectacular.
Oh, I forgot about the Hollis Slay Spectacular. I liked it.
It annoyed me that it wasn't really a pick the most holiday queen, which they were pretending it was going to be. It was really more of a variety show, 1970s style.
It was. It was largely there to remind us who some of the returning queens were.
Yeah. Like we needed reminders of Latrice. We knew who Latrice Royale was. It was kind of weird that Jasmine Masters had a bag over her head for the entire second half of the show.
Yeah, why was that, I wonder?
Word on the street is that Jasmine said on her Instagram that she left because Shangela was late for a bunch of stuff. Now, I had already kind of predicted Jasmine to go out first in week one of All Stars, and that is what happened. Now, I got nothing against Jasmine Masters. I think Jasmine Masters is very good at Jasmine Masters' job, but Jasmine Masters is maybe not great at being on RuPaul's Drag Race.
Right. I agree with that.
And so let's talk about this first episode.
Okay. So the first episode they had, the audience was members, LGBTQ members of the armed forces.
Yeah.
In the audience. But there were also a lot of drag queens in the audience when the camera would zoom out. But
yeah. Everybody brought a talent, sort of a talent show thing.
Right. They were trying to do a USO-style show, was what they intended to do, but they didn't really follow through with it in any way.
Yeah, I felt like either they had been told, reinforce your brand as hard as you can, or everybody came to that conclusion on their own, because what you got was Monet Exchange doing the sponge thing, and tired of that. I like Monet Exchange.
I love Monet, but I'm tired of the sponges.
But the sponge isn't that iconic.
I felt like the producers didn't necessarily tell them, do your brand, but they're like, do the thing you did on your season of Drag Race that people will remember you for.
Yeah, like Trinity comes out and is like, I'm Trinity the Tuck, and I'm going to do a thing about tucking. And it was really good.
It was. I had no idea spray adhesives were involved.
Oh,
I thought it was just duct tape and prayer.
Well, cursing more than prayer, I think.
Yeah, probably.
There was that brown cow thing, which nobody remembers. That wasn't
nobody
iconic.
Nobody remembers that brown cow thing.
Like, yeah, you thought you thought a giraffe pattern was a brown cow. That's...
And now you're doing a whole song about a brown cow, and it is not a good song.
Yeah. And Jasmine came out and did what we were told, and... All right, let's be clear. Our show is called The Villain Edit. So we are aware that editing can strongly affect things.
Yes.
So we don't know, for example, if Jasmine Masters' stand-up routine killed or died. But we didn't see any funny parts.
No, she was just doing a thing that she had done on her Instagram that went viral.
Yeah. And if you're going to do stand-up, you should plan...
a joke.
Plan your jokes. Know what you're going to say.
Yeah, when she went on the stage, even backstage, they're like, oh, what are you going to do? She's like, I'm going to do stand-up. Are you writing anything down? No, I'll just do it off the cuff. And that works at Hamburger Mary's during brunch. But it does not work so well.
Yeah. If you're a highly skilled stand-up comedian, you can riff, and it'll be great. Paul F. Tompkins will do that, and it's hilarious. It didn't look great here. And also, speaking of the villain edit, that's what Gia Gunn is getting. But I feel no sympathy, because Gia Gunn appears to have decided to get the villain edit. Like, she
went in, yeah.
Like, she went in planning to say a whole bunch of mean things about people in interviews and maybe make some cool facial expressions because being gift is the highest form of flattery. And I think achieved that. What did you think of Gia's performance?
I don't remember it.
That's a problem.
I know which one she is. She is the Asian trans activist.
Yes. But you don't really remember what she did at all, do you?
No, I don't remember what she did. Some prancing?
Probably. I mean, many of them pranced.
There was probably some prancing. Maybe some lip syncing.
I remember Manila Luzon did that sort of impressionistic dancing thing while painting on a canvas, and then at the end she turns it over and it's some flowers in a vase. And then
that match her dress.
And then there's a quick change so it matches her dress.
Right, and that was cute. That was at least a thing.
Yeah, I like that because it built well. It held your attention while you were going, what is she doing? And then at the end, there's a big reveal, and then you stop the act so everybody applauds while they're still on the...
Right. And Pheromone was doing a burlesque number.
Yeah.
And slipped over something that she had previously dropped on the stage, slipped over her costume, fell really hard.
And that's fine.
But was not able to recover.
Yeah, like when she's on the ground, she could have done a little pose down there and tried to sell it, and I think everybody would have found it charming.
Uh-huh.
But the story of that first episode, I felt like, was that the real queens, the ones that perform on stage, kind of look down on Jasmine and Farrah, who, in other respects, have very little in common, because they're internet queens. Farrah's huge...
Oh, that's right, they're internet queens now. Internet yeah. queen is the new pageant queen.
It's, you're big on Instagram, but... can you really perform?
Who cares? I'm big on Instagram.
Well, Jasmine...
I'm not big on Instagram.
No. That's because you don't take enough pictures of this ugly dog.
I take plenty of pictures. That's all my Instagram is pictures of me and pictures of this dumb dog.
Hello, Bianca. We're talking crap about you on the internet. But I'm certainly in for this season. It's a good, solid
episode. I'm excited. It was a good, solid episode. I didn't like all the performances, but I like that they all tried different things.
Yep. It remains to be seen if Monet can pull out and go with another gimmick, or if she was really planning on just doing sponge material until getting kicked off.
Oh, Monet, no, back away from the sponge. You did that whole music video about being in a sponge bath.
Yeah.
The sponge is not you are better than that. You are better than the sponge, Monet.
I'll say that Jennifer Lewis, phenomenal guest judge, somebody who naturally says things like, yes, queen. Like, whenever anyone on the show says things like that, or in, like...
it always sounds sarcastic.
Like, somebody go, yes, queen. This is who... this is where that sort of attitude
right,
comes from.
This is an actual black woman.
An actual... dramatic black woman.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
I really enjoyed her. She was great.
She would lift you up if you were great, and she would be mean to you if you were mm-hmm. bad. That's what I want out of a judge.
Absolutely.
Enough of Drag Race.
Who do you think's going home next week?
I had Gia Gunn in my pool. I think they're
going to keep her around because she's bitchy.
Yeah, so now I think probably Farrah, because Farrah doesn't have a lot of supporters in the house, and because they're doing that thing again about whoever wins has to pick somebody to send home.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people, if Farrah's in the bottom again,
and yeah, if it's Farrah and then somebody that they like more, it's gonna yeah. it's a popularity contest.
Like, if the bottom two are Farrah and Manila, it doesn't matter who did better, they're just going to send Farrah home.
Yeah, because Manila is immensely more talented.
Sorry,
Farrah.
So I am expecting Farrah to go home in the next couple of weeks. And all I feel bad for her. You're still very talented. You look great.
Yeah.
I would like to suddenly swerve and talk about the Holiday Gingerbread Showdown.
Holiday Gingerbread Showdown.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
We somehow got invested in the finale because Beatriz was amazing in her episode.
Okay, so let's start at the beginning.
Okay.
Hollywood Gingerbread Showdown is the one where they're allowed to bake their things at home and then assemble them on the set.
Yes, except they weren't in the finale.
That's true.
But a lot of that show turned out to rely on how well can you pack your gingerbread and ship it so it doesn't break, and did you plan for the different humidity in the studio?
Right. So in last week's episode, or the previous episode to this one, there's this woman named Beatriz who is a world gingerbread champion. She is from she's from Latin America. And she makes these lacework piping. She is so good. I've never seen anything as good as her stuff.
They have a judge who's usually the mean one who says, "Oh, my darling, that was so bad. I could barely eat. I could barely look at this thing." And what she said about Beatriz was, "Thank you for bringing your art to our show and letting me experience it."
Yes. And then at the end, she said, "Thank you for elevating the art of gingerbread."
Her piping is so good. It is stunning.
Yeah.
Like, she should clearly be judging these shows or something.
Yeah, she does not need to be competing on them because she's so good.
So we watched the episode she won. We were like, well, now I gotta see the finale.
Right. That's where we previously were like, these guys are all okay, but nobody's really impressing me.
Yeah.
And then that happened, and I was like, oh, crap. Now we got to watch the finale.
And we did, and it was great.
And she won.
One of the other contestants, also very good, the lady who, like, does faces, like, in icing, and she's, her drawing looks appealing and fun, and the filling she does inside the outlines is just flawless.
Right. She does frosted cookies very well.
Yes, she is a cookie artist.
She is a cookie artist, and she is absolutely an artist. Her style is very cartoony, but it's perfect.
But then Beatriz does her thing, and you look at it and you go, oh, that's great. And also she has a million tiny little gingerbread, like, ornaments she'll put around.
Right. She did a gingerbread tree. She did gingerbread ornaments. Many of those ornaments were little individually built birdhouses with incredibly detailed piped roofs and just beautiful designs all over them. And, yeah.
For a basically silly show, it was great to see somebody just really, really good at it. Which is what I like about that kind of show. Like, you're watching Skin Wars and you're thinking, all right, face painting, I get it. Yeah, you guys are okay. And then there'll be somebody who's really good at it, and you go, oh my god, that lady did completely vanish in front of that wall full of groceries.
Like, wow, that's amazing.
Skin Wars is on Netflix right now. We watched all of it when it first aired. I think it's a fun show.
It is a fun show. It's totally worth watching. If you like your competitive reality shows, it's a lot of fun.
It's got RuPaul as a judge, but not a producer. So that's kind of fun.
Yeah.
I liked Skin Wars. And like I say, there are some people on that show you're like, oh my god, that person's amazing. And I didn't.
And then there are some people that you're like, really?
Yeah. So that's kind of what I got out of Beatriz was, I'm watching these people make gingerbread houses and they're okay. And then, oh my god, that's art.
Yeah.
So let me tell you about the Curse of Oak Island.
Oh, is that island still cursed, honey?
Oh, man, it is cursed forever now.
Well, but they keep finding so much evidence.
They
Do you want to talk about all the important evidence they found?
Well, mostly what happened in this episode is they dug a hole. All right, 50 years ago, a guy named Dave Blankenship believes he hit metal 100 feet down. But he did not mark where that hole was, apparently. We have seen his map of the entire island, and it is a crazy person map that looks a little bit like the map from Time Bandits.
Yeah.
So, right now, right now the island is covered in heavy equipment from a construction company that keeps getting name-checked as a way of paying for all this nonsense.
Yes, and I hope it's working for them because they're building a giant dam.
Oh, man. We'll get to the dam in a second. First,
oh, I'm
this
sorry.
Hole.
I didn't mean to jump ahead.
They've been doing this thing where they blow up dynamite all over the island and record this seismic shock, sort of like sonar, to get an underground map. And their map said there might be a cavity in this area right here. So they dug a hole, and there wasn't. It was a...
What happened is that there was a layer of sand, and the looser packed sand under the ground made the sound echo weirdly,
yeah.
So it showed up as possibly being a void, but no, it's just some sand.
And their drill kept going until it hit bedrock, granite, and then they said, well, I guess there's nothing here. Well, there's nothing in this specific hole. They will never say there's nothing on the island.
No, absolutely not.
The other things that happened this week were they're building this giant dam to keep the water away from this one cove where they believe there is something interesting. P.S. There is not.
But the sluice gates, the secret...
There's a mysterious U-shaped structure that somebody once found while... Dave Blankenship again, I think. That somebody once found when they put a dam up. This U-shaped structure is almost certainly...
A dock.
Or another dam that a previous person put. Because you have to remember, what we are searching on right now has been dug up and... buried and dug up and buried again for hundreds of years.
That's true.
By successive ding-dongs.
True. I think it looked more like a... It didn't look like a dam to me. It looked more like a dock.
Sure. Because these guys get very excited whenever they find anything. Even though... I mean, it's an island off Nova Scotia. Sure, sailors could have been here. We know sailors came here at some point.
Yeah, it's an island off Nova Scotia. But some of those sailors might have been Knights Templar.
Oh, Knights Templar. They are convinced that Knights Templar are involved. One of the things... I'm going to build to the really dumb stuff from this episode.
All right.
So first, the science porn. We got some construction porn. If you know a six-year-old boy, they would have loved some of these shots of these cranes working.
Oh, yeah. There's lots of machinery and cranes and drills going on. It was good.
Yeah.
I like that.
We also got some science porn. Because they found this lead cross a while ago. And they want to know how old this lead cross is. So a couple episodes ago, they went to a Canadian lab and they irradiated it or something. The show said they irradiated it. I don't know that lead irradiates that easily. But they got a molecular breakdown of it of some sort.
They used a mass spectrometer.
Yeah. So in this episode, they talked to an adorable German scientist.
He was so adorable and delighted, and he had red hair, and he looked kind of like Beaker.
A lot of the people on the show are old, weathered-looking guys, so it's nice to have some young people on the show. So this guy, he's in Germany, and what he specializes in is knowing where metals come from. Like, if it's from this quarry, there's going to be this much nickel. If it's from that quarry, there's going to be molybdenum. If it's from this quarry, that's not even lead. That's just gold. You're an idiot. So I don't know how often he's called upon to take an analysis of a piece of lead and say exactly where it came from. But he got to do it this time.
And it was really interesting.
Yep.
It did turn out it was from France.
He believes the southern France and... not from any of the quarries that has been used in the last few hundred years.
Right, so it's old and it's French.
According to him, pre-15th century, which is interesting at first because you think, well, Columbus was 1492. It's weird that there would be lead from France from the 1400s or from before the 1400s, really.
On an island
next to Canada.
Off of Canada.
So... that's neat. It doesn't necessarily tell us anything.
But the Templars, it rained the chateau.
Yeah. Naturally, the guys on the show are like, so that doesn't mean it couldn't have been a Templar cross. So they're decided it is a Templar cross.
Absolutely.
Now, the problem I have with this is just because the lead came out of the ground before the 1400s, you still don't really know when it was turned into a cross, when it was brought over.
Yeah.
But they're very excited, and it was neat to see what can be done.
Yeah, it's interesting to see the limits of science.
Yeah. one thing science can't do is explain to these people that if they've been digging this long and haven't found anything, there probably isn't anything there. Another thing science can't do is measure how dumb some of these segments are.
Oh, some of the segments.
So one regular segment on this show, The Curse of Oak Island, is you have to talk to a conspiracy theorist. Somebody...
You got to have someone come in who's got a theory about the island. This week's theory...
There was the guy who came in and said, you know, the map of Oak Island looks just like this map from an early printing of Treasure Island.
Yes, they are both islands with a bay.
Yeah, that one was very unconvincing because people noticed that a while ago, and the artist who drew that map, that island, said, I don't know, I was just drawing an island. They wanted an island that could have treasure on it and drew some circles.
Yeah.
This time what we got was a guy who said he was a direct hereditary descendant of the Knights Templar, and also in the Knights Templar now, which, if you're in the Knights Templar now, and you claim your Knights Templar has anything to do with the old Knights Templar, shouldn't you already know where the treasure is?
I don't know.
So
maybe the Knights Templar are like the Elks Club. You don't know what the guys in Atlanta are doing.
All right. So he had this real elaborate theory that nobody understood, that there's these boulders on the island and they sort of form a cross. And according to him, those boulders were laid out in very specific locations. And if you put those numbers in a grid and wave your hands real fast, it tells you that you need to go down towards the money pit, but stop at a certain point and turn right and go for like 50 feet. And there's the treasure. And that's why you haven't found it.
It had something to do with the Knights Templars holding the numbers 3.2
also
being important to them. So you would measure all of the cross and then divide it by 3.2 for some reason.
And there was also a thing about how John the Baptist's skull was the origin for skull and crossbones, which I do not think is true.
Well, the Templar Navy flew the skull and crossbones.
Doesn't mean it was necessarily...
In order to celebrate the death of John the Baptist.
Celebrate the death of John the Baptist?
Memorialize? Everybody knows that.
Over 1,000 years later? That is harsh, Knights Templar. I did like that at one point they said John the Baptist was famously beheaded. And I thought, you know, that's true. There are not many people more famously beheaded than John the Baptist.
Marie Antoinette?
There are whole plays about John the Baptist's
Like five films about Marie Antoinette.
I saw a residence show where there was a song about bringing John the Baptist's head.
That was a good song. That was a really good residence show.
That was great. So anyway, he went on and on and on while the people at the table, who are, in my opinion, generally up for any load of nonsense as long as it supports their previously believed line of nonsense, were just kind of looking at each other. And finally, when he was done, they said, well, we don't know where the original money pit shaft was, so this doesn't... Even if this...
Well, thank you for your input. That was a really interesting theory.
Yeah.
Is what they said.
What went unsaid was, even if this made sense, which it doesn't, it's not actionable in any way.
No!
The core treasure hunter belief of this kind of treasure hunter is that there's treasure hidden everywhere. The Knights Templars buried treasure here, and the Confederate soldiers buried treasure over there, and they hid it very well, and then they put a million clues to it everywhere you look. So every rock is, if you could just interpret it, pointing to the treasure. The people that believe that the Confederates buried gold, this is true. Some of them are firmly of the belief that there are sentinels.
People you mean like sentinel, like I know there's aren't there sentinel trees?
Well, the sentinels are people, like who hand the responsibility down through generations to keep the signs updated. So, like if I were a sentinel, I would know where the treasure was. I wouldn't take the treasure, but if there was a storm that knocked down one of the important trees, I would go out and put the tree back up and make sure the branches are in just the right position.
So that they're still pointing toward the treasure, yeah. Which you have not taken because right. You are a good man.
That's how everything can be a secret sign to the treasure. whether it's a rock or a tree.
Right. And on Oak Island, the Templar connection that these people were making was there's a rock on Oak Island that's shaped kind of like a head.
They believe it's shaped like a skull. It is not.
It has a nose.
If it's a head, it has a nose. Skulls don't have those.
It's definitely not a skull.
No.
But they said that the skull-shaped rock is solid evidence that the Knights Templar were around, because the Knights Templar used the skull and crossbones flags on their ship because of the skull of John the Baptist.
Yeah, that whole line I find super sketchy. It's not as convincing as, like, they have the one where the lead cross looks kind of like this one cross that was carved on the wall by the Knights Templar in prison, which also doesn't hold up super well, but at least that, you know, you can look at something. So they're very deep into their Knights Templar thing right now, and best of luck to them. Umberto Eco said in Foucault's Pendulum that you can really tell a crackpot because it comes around to the Knights Templar sooner or later.
Yep.
And in this case, it is sooner.
And constantly.
Oh my God. Like, just look for treasure. You don't have to be getting into all this philosophy and stuff.
No, just dig another hole.
Yeah.
Bring those cranes on. Those cranes are amazing.
They have so much heavy equipment right now.
So many cranes.
It is hard to believe, and in fact I do not believe, that they couldn't find something just by digging.
Seriously.
But by this point, they're not even digging at the money pit most of the time.
No, now they're trying to dig on a beach because they believe that they'll find a drain.
Right. They
believe that there are these drains, and when the tide comes in, the drains fill with water, which goes down into the money pit to protect it from thieves.
The original money pit story that everybody read in Reader's Digest is these kids come to Oak Island, and they chase some people off. And they come back the next day, and they dig a hole. And at like 50 feet, they find a layer of wood. And another 50 feet, they find a layer of metal. And another 50 feet, they find a mysterious rock. And they say, we're pretty far. This is a pretty deep hole. We'll come back tomorrow. And the next day, it's filled with water. And the belief of the treasure hunters is that it's filled with water because there are these secret tunnels that were dug from the beach 200 yards away down into that area. So if anyone digs a hole, it'll fill with water.
But it's an island.
Yeah.
I don't know how deep the water table is. But it is not rare to dig a hole on an island and have it fill up with water.
No, the water table's right there. And also, I've seen how much trouble they have digging holes with 21st century technology. No one was doing this in 1300, guys.
No.
Come on. Nobody was digging. God. So I'm still watching this show and I love it. It's just terrible.
It is not the best. But it is a fascinating look at the human mind.
Yes. Fortune Fire, Master of Arms.
Still watching those.
They are making some weird, silly weapons, aren't they?
Master of Arms is trying too hard with their silly weapons. Can you make a tomahawk that's also a gun? No. Fortune Fire made a tomahawk that was a pipe.
Yeah, they did. That was weird.
A pipe
right?
tomahawk. But a pipe tomahawk is a real thing. I'm not sure crossbow gun is a real thing.
For the pipe tomahawk on Fortune Fire, they did test it by smoking out of it, which I appreciated.
Yes.
And then they threw it at some walls. On Master of Arms, it's always, in round one, you have to make an axe. And then in round two, turn that axe into a crossbow that's also an axe.
Yeah. That is their gimmick, is dumb multi-weapons, the kind that you might invent if you were in fourth grade and bored.
And it's too bad that the weapons are so silly, because I like the show.
I do enjoy the show. The judges are good, they have a good rapport, the competitors are interesting.
I don't know how many
skilled.
I don't know how many competitors they can find for this show, because it has to be somebody who knows how to make a flintlock. And that's real specific, even if it doesn't require forging the metal yourself, which it usually does.
Agreed. Flintlocks are complicated, and they don't work very well.
Hey, you know that song, Flintlock Glock, by Captain Dan and the Scurvy Crew?
I do. Flintlock Glock is a great song.
Sorry, everybody. Talking about a terrible song called Flintlock Glock.
It's a good song.
I like that song.
See?
I think we have run out of things to talk about. Do you want to do any plugs this time?
I am on a podcast called Dun 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 Dun. Don't read the Latin.
Oh, she remembered it.
And I'm on another podcast.
Hold on. Don't Read the Latin. What's that about?
Horror movies.
Cool.
Some friends and I sit around. It's ladies talking about horror movies. It's interesting. There's some great episodes. There's some not great episodes. It's a podcast. What do you want from me?
Nice plug.
I just recorded episode number 10. Aren't you a smart ass? Oh, now we got to do a content warning. I'm the worst.
And what's this other podcast you just recorded the 10th episode of?
I just recorded the 10th episode of The Night Library. Ooh,
welcome
spooky.
Welcome to The Night Library.
Yes, that's the one.
Where the late fee is your life.
That's it.
Well,
it's about horror novels.
Okay.
It started off being inspired by Paperbacks from Hell by Grady Hendrix. And it just kind of took off from there. The most recent episode we did was Interview with the Vampire. And it is a good time and very funny.
Oh, that's that book about Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt?
Yes. It's fanfic about Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt.
And their daughter, Kirsten Dunst.
Yes.
Well, that sounds great.
What about you? What have you been up to lately, you internet scamp?
Well, I don't have my own podcast, aside from this one, of course. But I am frequently on The Incomparable. I believe the holiday end spectacular of The Incomparable is coming up soon, in which people talk about the things we liked from the podcast and things we liked from real life. And that's always a real good, fun episode.
You're going to talk about me, right?
Yes.
Good boy.
And an episode of the Incomparable Game Show just went up where you can hear me play Fiasco. And I think that was a good time. We are at the North Pole, part of Santa's crew, and my character was an elf.
Mm.
Sort of a cigar-chomping union guy.
What, do you want a shelf?
No.
Good. You want a rat.
We should have done that joke. Mm. I'm mad now. Ask them if we can re-record it, even though we...
So that you can do an elf shelf joke?
That's right.
The elf on the shelf is just a narc. You don't want anything to do with him.
Well, my character was not entirely on the up and up. I think he would have been a good narc. And, of course, my Twitter handle is @Monty_Ashley, and I encourage people to follow me there because I think I am funny on Twitter.
He is. You should follow him. He's a delight.
And, as always, toast to Slex!
Toast to Slex, everybody!